So now we have an opportunity to have an open discussion with leaders in the union, the National Women's Co-Chairs, Sisters Sedalia Ribeiro and Helen Kennedy, our Diversity Vice President, Sister Yolanda McLean, the Director of the Equality Branch, Sister Maureen Morrison, and our two national officers, Brothers Paul Moist and Claude Genereux. So this session is not going to be talking heads from the front. We have no opening remarks. What we want is to hear from you, your ideas, your suggestions and plans, priorities moving forward. We have staff in the room who are recording the discussion. They'll be taking notes for the record. New ideas, priorities, and suggestions for action will be added and form part of the report that will be sent to you after the conference ends. This is an opportunity for you to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about with the people who are up here, any ideas that you have. But some suggestions to maybe get the discussion going is, you know, how do we build on the energy and the momentum that's been created here this week and bring it back to our workplaces, our divisions, and our locals to make real gains for women in bargaining? Or, you know, I know that there's some directors in the room who are responsible for the drafting, the early drafts of the strategic directions document. Maybe you have some recommendations about what should be included in the strategic directions document at convention this year. Or maybe you have some really great concrete recommendations for networking, resolutions, or legislative and anti-privatization initiatives. This is our opportunity to hear from you. So I hope that we can start this discussion off. We have leaders up here who are going to engage with you, so it's all up to you, and I see a hand already.
First of all, I'd like to say this was a very good convention. It's one that should happen every year. And speaking of equality, when we go to other national conventions, first-time speakers at the mic get a T-shirt. It's my first time at the mic. Medium, large would be fine. In order to carry out what we've been doing here this week is I'm trying not to focus on this camera that's on me. I'm going to go back to my local, and my intention is to start a women's task force within our local. On that note, we did the budget yesterday while I was in Montreal, and we are in a deficit. Excuse me. So the funding is not there. And what I'm requesting is, what are the avenues and the process to get national to fund our local women's task force within our locals? If there's any funding, that would be greatly appreciated. Okay.
Thank you for that question. And on your T-shirt, I'm going to look to Jane. Maybe Jane, we could arrange for Union Development to provide a T-shirt to the first-time speaker? All right. Provide your name and your contact information to Jane, sister. You will get your T-shirt. Thank you so much.
I have just a few more comments, though.
Oh, sorry.
The strikers' information. Can we get the information on the appeal that we had on the floor on the three strikes that are going on? And Claude had said that in 2 weeks you were going to match the amount that was going to be submitted. It's going to take me more than 2 weeks to get the approval, so I was looking at perhaps extending that 2 weeks in order for all the locals to be able to send their checks so you can have a bigger amount to match. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And it's not so hard to talk on the mic, so I welcome every first comer to speak on the mic.
Good for you, sister. So it's a question on cost share. So, brother.
So power. You see, you think we know everything about mics. Number nine, by the way, for those of you who don't know, John Lennon, this is where he, with Yoko Ono, penned that song. In a way that relates to our work here. Give peace a chance. It's up there on 18th floor, but I'm drifting. Already, so I'm giving you my age and my generation. we've got many ways we can support locals, and it's not only with direct, immediate financial assistance, but I'll get to this. You mentioned union development, Candice, for one thing, if something could be done with T-shirts. But back at the local, with your servicing rep, you could look at this, try to come up with a plan that needs our union development support for your specific work plan. So that's one way. So you don't even need to look at a price tab attached to this. That's services that is provided to you. And it's based on real work plans. So Jane Stinson is here, and there are ed reps, again, to use QP's parlance, in different regions, in all our regions. As well, we have in our defense fund some allocations. They're limited, but you can tap into them. Again, I would suggest you work with your reps. Maybe they'll look with to other specialist reps, such as communication reps. Sometimes you can build a campaign to get better support from your membership in your own local to work at this. So maybe there's a bit of money. Stan Marshall is a managing director that oversees money that we have in our defense fund to support projects like this. So it's not the basic services of every day, a special project. That can be done as well. And because I don't want to be too long, I'll stop at this for now. You see the drift? There's a rep. You should tap into the strength of our servicing rep, a QP rep.
Thank you,
to look at this.
Thank you.
And extension? Yes. But let's do it. It'll be extended, but we thought 2 weeks so that these three locals can see the size of that support the soonest. That's why we tried to put it in the framework of 2 weeks. And you can go on the website to see more info as this happens. And I'm sure they'll get to victory. Thanks.
Thank you, Claude. Okay, so just in terms of order, I'm going to start at this side of the room. So if the people who have the roving mics can just identify where they are and who they're sitting beside. So I'm going to go with the speaker that Corina has. And could you please identify your name and local number as well? Thanks.
Hi, I'm Shelley Bird from QP Local 2204. I just wanted to say that the workshops that I took part in, we generated some real practical, concrete equity bargaining issues. And I really want to... What I was concerned about is that we would all gather here this week, and then we would go back into our locals, and women would be going back into large locals alone and trying to build momentum alone in their locals. And I was concerned about that because I don't want to lose the things that we generated from the workshops yesterday. And so I've been thinking since coming here that to keep the momentum going, it's not just relying on individual women, it's also relying on the national and our divisions to help us to keep the momentum going rather than relying on individual women to do that in their locals. I think that we need to build on the Women's Task Force. I think that we can learn when our national makes it a priority to make women an issue, it becomes a priority. When our national makes bargaining equity an issue, it will become an issue and it will gain momentum. So I think that we need funding from the national as we got through the task force. We need funding flowed down to divisions, down to councils, and down to locals, and that we use the bargaining process to develop and or actually to do education in our locals about the importance of equity issues, that we do education in our locals as we put together our bargaining teams, because if we're going to get our locals to support the idea of having diverse representation on our bargaining committees, then we need to do membership education in the locals around that. And then as we're developing our bargaining proposals, we need to be doing education around how we get all of our members to stand strong on top-up to maternity leave. Like when the rubber hits the road and you've got a bargaining demands with a wage increase for everybody on the bargaining agenda or top-up for maternity leave, oftentimes the top-up for maternity leave falls off the bargaining table unless there's genuine, knowledgeable support in the local to stand firm on top-up for maternity leave. But that's a lot of work, and it's too much work to leave on individual women here in the room. I also think it's critically important that the national reps who service locals also undertake equity training and making equity bargaining issues a priority for locals. So that means sustained, ongoing support coming from the national to support women in their locals, in their district councils, and in their divisions to maintain the momentum. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. So Helen, what do you think? How can the National Women's Committee support women when they go back into their locals with education and the things that Shelley talked about?
Well, one of the things that, I mean, you raised the task force, and I just want to be clear so all the sisters know, there is no task force at the national level anymore. It's finished at the last convention, and the report and the recommendations were transferred to the National Women's Committee to ensure that things were followed up on. So I can assure you that it's in the realm of the National Women's Committee. I absolutely agree that I don't want women to hear to, or the our sisters to feel that, okay, now what do I do all alone and back in my local? That we want to keep connections. One of the things that we pushed in the task force and was echoed in the workshops yesterday is that we need to do this similar kind of work at the provincial level, at the local level, if you have district councils in your region, at the district council level, so that, you know, we want to have as many women's committees being active, because that's where you can actually pursue and keep accountable the people that need to be accountable to. I think that there are also, the National Women's Committee had talked about doing a report card on the recommendations from the task force, so that for the next convention, so people will have a list of what things have happened, and certainly this bargaining conference is something that has happened. There are other recommendations that are in the works that are being followed through. Some, you know, that what the National Women's Committee does is actually monitor where we are in terms of our the implementation of the task force recommendations. But I think it's also that you work with your local servicing rep and your equality staff, because we do have equality reps now, many more than we used to, and to do that education work to ensure that when there's a regional school being developed, that there's bargaining equality and bargaining women's equality, that the bargaining women's equality is inserted and integrated into as many workshops as it is applicable to, so that it's not just when you go to an equality workshop, you actually get the message around equality issues. So those are some of the ways. But I also think that we've talked about implementing a listserv from this conference. And I think that it's really important. We're talking at the end of today about resolutions that will be developed that we can actually post to the email, to the listserv, so that you will have those for your conventions. And sometimes you think, okay, resolutions aren't really something. But I have to say, resolution like the Grace Hartman Award came from a local union. I actually wrote that one. So, you know, the resolutions around some of the complete structural change of our women's committee in Ontario to make it representative came from, resolution. So to get policy change in CUPE, you need to go to the convention and have resolutions. And I think that that's really important to understand how the whole political process works. And if we can coordinate and leverage our influence into some power, it may be through ensuring that we have resolutions that address our issues at the national convention.
Thank you, Helen.
It's Cheryl Burns from CUPE Local 1936. There's a few issues, actually, that I want to address. And first of all, I just want to say that it's so fabulous that we've had this conference. It was a recommendation that came from the National Women's Task Force, so it feels a little bit like a dream come true. So it's very heartening to know that we're all here and we're doing this, and the ideas and the inspiration that has come out of this conference are phenomenal. The first thing that I want to address is something that actually hasn't come up at all in this conference, and it's around bargaining environmental issues. So I just want to put a word out for that, because it's time. Our climate and our world is in jeopardy. It won't be around much longer if we don't start taking care of our environment. So I would encourage you, in addition to everything that we talked about, to go back and think about looking for bargaining language, looking for green language. And there is some really phenomenal language, actually, up on the CUPE National website. So feel free to go and take a look and see what you can find. So I hope that you all put that on your agendas as well. One of the recommendations that came out of the task force was to have a women's coordinator, to have a CUPE National Women's Coordinator, and that's not happened yet. And I think it's really, really critical that we build on the momentum that we got when we formed the CUPE National Women's Task Force, and that's come out of this particular conference. The role of the CUPE National Women's Coordinator would be to ensure that women's issues are addressed consistently in our union and that they're addressed in the long term, and that we do follow through on the recommendations that were put forward by both the CUPE National Women's Task Force as well as the CUPE National Women's Committee. So, Claude, I know you hate being labeled as the money guy, and I know that's your role, and I also know that you're so much more than that. I know that you have totally supported us in women's issues, and that you've supported me and my issues around disability-related issues. I've been able to come to you and talk to you, but one of the questions I have for you is, when is this position going to happen? I also want to recognize that that's with at the will and the whim of the NEB, so you are simply the spokesperson for that, but I'm hoping that that will happen. So that's a question for you. And the last final thing is, I don't know how many of you have noticed, but I've had real-time captioning throughout this conference, and I've had a number of people come to me and say, you know what, it would have been great if we could have all benefited from this. So while I'm really, really grateful to have had this and it's made it possible for me to participate in this conference, I'd just like to make a pitch for ensuring that it's made available either on a larger screen or if captioning is provided. Thank you. So it's about accessibility for all of us, right? Not just for me. I certainly don't want to be singled out as the only person here who has accessibility-related needs. I know that's not true at all. So thank you. And a question for you, Claude. Thanks.
So maybe before we hear from Claude, because we've already heard from Claude once, maybe we could hear from Maureen first about what it would mean for you, Maureen, to have that kind of a staff person in your department. And then Claude, would that be okay? Thanks.
Okay, great. Set me up here between the national officers and we'll do a bit of lobbying in front of everybody. Well, myself, I think it would be a great idea to have. Yes, of course, it would be a wonderful idea. And it has been proposed that there would be an additional person in the National Equality Branch who would be designated as the women, you know, dealing with women's issues. That position wasn't in the last budget. There was an additional person in the Equality Branch, the Aboriginal coordinator, which was fantastic. So we're very happy about that. But and we do have to look within the branch in terms of the resources we have to, and we will be doing that to actually try and focus more on women's issues with our existing resources. But of course, we would be delighted to have additional resources, and I'll turn it over to either Paul or Claude to respond.
Thank you, Cheryl. Fair question. When convention was over in 07, many things were identified, many priorities. This was one. And again, the NEB, mindful of acronyms, the National Executive Board, again, 24 members. I forgot to mention Ken. Ken, president of HU, is another of those two dozens. Natalie is here today. Natalie Stringer from Transat, Air Transat. Hi, Natalie, another board member. So about half a dozen of us are here. We're listening. But we try to approach this in a balanced way. So from Convention 07, what we decided to do, eyes wide open, was to create capacity on the ground in regions first. So we added two equality reps, women equality reps, east of Quebec. Again, in the way QP is structured, we have a region that is called Maritimes, covers two provinces, New Brunswick and PEI. And Maureen Michaud is our equality rep. Maureen was standing up. Hi, Maureen. And we created a second position in what we call the Atlantic region in QP. The two other provinces from the Eastern Bloc, which is another expression we use in QP, Nova Scotia and Newfoundland and Labrador. And Jackie Bramwell is in the room. Maybe not now, but she's our other equality rep. So that's the decision we made together to do that here in the financial capacity that we had then. For this budget, year 2009, that was passed in December, we decided to create one more equality position, but one that would champion Aboriginal issues. So we do have an Aboriginal equality rep, Don Moran, who I think is not in the room right now, and if he is, he's in Saskatchewan. And that's what he's been doing. And defending Aboriginal issues is good for both women and men. And I'll say it as candidly as I can say this. I'm not dumb. I know, of course, we need to do this, but we try to approach it in a balanced way. It is absolutely clear that this conference would think it's the best idea to do, and we agree. But we did say, and Candace asked us the question, not to put Candace on the spot. During the deliberations, she's asked us, so what about this position? And we said, we know we'll need at least to address this issue with a temporary solution. So we have added temporary additional support. And I'm sure when we'll get to the next budget, the NEB will have to think about this. You're right, it's not only Paul, it's not only me. Others are in the room. And we'll see the resources we have. I think there's a good chance it's coming. A pretty good chance it's coming. Thanks.
Thank you, Claude. And Helen Kennedy has just asked to say a brief word on this as well.
It's great to get that assurance, but I think that what Sister Gloria said on Tuesday night was that we need to see it in the rule book. So this would be one good resolution to put forward to come to the National Convention, just as a nice reminder and to see a measure of the support from the sisters here.
Just a couple of things. We want to hear from as many people as possible. So I'm going to make a commitment to you that if your questions or comments are brief within 1 minute, I assure you that the response from the panel will be within that time period as well. So quick answers and quick questions and quick responses as well. So Maureen Michaud has a speaker.
Very brief. First of all, since you're going to send us all this funding of discussions, I encourage you, all of you, to send a resolution for the convention. That's one way. Second, no, my time is out.
Well, I think all the panelists agree that's a great idea, sister. Colleen.
Deb Magson, Local 38, Calgary Inside Workers, first time speaker. So be patient.
Need another t-shirt.
Yeah, mine's around a 3X. I can't do the medium, but...
all sizes.
So I just want to start by, and I'll try to be brief, but I just want to start by saying that I sit on my local Eco Opportunities Committee as well as the provincial for Alberta, and I represent women's issues there. They're near and dear to my heart, and I grew up in a home where I am an adult survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and where I watched our kitchen table be cleared regularly by a man's fist. So it's a lot of issues and a lot of stuff that went on this week really helped me to bring stuff back to our province and to my local, and I appreciate all the hard work that went into everything that took place here and thank everyone. That being said, I do have what may be a little bit of a controversial question, and it's more of a point of clarity. I feel I'm having a hard time reconciling the naming convention of this conference being setting the table. For me, thank you, sisters. I believe that we have worked long and hard to get away from stereotypes and to get away from the idea that women's place is in the kitchen. And I just need a point of clarity there of how that came about. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sister, for that. Sister Sedalia, did you want an opportunity to respond?
Thanks, sister, for that intervention. We had heard that by a few sisters over the last few days, and so we recognize that we recognize what you're saying. And I guess the thought behind it was when we bargain, the general statement about bargaining is going to the bargaining table. And so we were trying to connect two issues, and maybe there wasn't enough further thought about what it actually would mean for some of the sisters at the conference. So again, thanks very much for sharing that with us, and we will take that into consideration when we're planning future conferences and the names around those conferences.
Thank you, Sedalia. Gwen.
6116, first time speaker. I just wanted to talk a little bit on the living wage. I mean, it's a campaign that started in England and was very successful. HEU has got an excellent website on the living wage, and we've done a lot of work on it. And I'm just asking for a commitment from Paul if he would make sure that his members are educated and information is sent out. We've got a video, everything on the living wage. And it's very important that we lift our members out of poverty and show them that we need to stand for them also.
Thank you, sister. Paul?
Thanks very much for that. Nationally, and I should know the name and I can't remember, a week ago, the National Anti-Poverty Organization that we give money to and will continue to change their name and had a rebirth of sorts. And I know from watching the paper that goes across our desk, every region of the country is working with coalition partners on increasing the minimum wage, living wage campaigns. But one thing I don't think we've done, and we can do it, is I've seen the stuff on the HU campaign at your convention last November, but I'll undertake that we will send that out to all regions of our union just by getting it into us, okay?
Thank you, Paul. Something just a little bit different, just in, to help speed this up a little bit and sort of help the flow a little bit. We're going to take three questions before you actually hear from the panelists, and then we'll turn it over to the panelists. So I'm going to do one with Karina, one with Colleen, and one with Ellen.
Thank you. Alex Schengberg, QP Local 391, Vancouver Public Library. Now, when we go back to British Columbia, all of us will be looking, all the QP locals will be looking towards organizing a campaign for pay equity for the provincial upcoming election. Now, here's the rub. We have Carol Taylor, or Carol, sorry, geez, big one. Carol James on side from the NDP. We have the NDP party on side. We're going to go forward with our campaign, and certainly we have support all over from the province and fabulous support from QP BC, QP National. But the sister the other day brought up Bill C-10. Now that scares the pants off me. We've got Stephen Harper once again. He didn't get it. He tried to roll back the Public Service Alliance contract, the female-dominated public service contract, and he was shouted down by the advent of the coalition, the portent of the coalition government. But now he's trying to sneak in Bill C-10, as the sister alerted us to, which effectively takes the power of legislative pay equity at the federal level and reduces it back to the bargaining table. Now, it's great if you can make gains at the bargaining table, but we all know legislated language is much more powerful, and we must all collectively fight this. And every time you look at this guy's record, he's the misogynist from hell. I mean, look at the list of crimes against women, and I'm serious. There's got to be some kind of human rights legislation when we add up the crimes against women that he's committed, more against women in the last few years he's been in than anywhere. So all of us, please go back to our locals, think about this campaign very seriously, point the finger straight at Stephen Harper for what he's doing to women, and that it's not just the Public Service Alliance, because whatever falls on them will come to filter down to us.
Thank you. Colleen?
Yep.
Lori White, Local 951 at the University of Victoria. We represent office technical and child care workers. When we're talking about violence against women and men, both in the workplace and outside the workplace, let's not forget about psychological violence or bullying. 37% of workers have directly experienced destructive bullying in the workplace. 45% of targeted individuals suffer a wide range of devastating health problems. More targets are women than men, and I think this is linked to the inequality women face every day. Bullying, like other forms of psychological violence, leaves no visible bruises, and so often leaves targets wondering if it's just their imagination or what did they do to deserve this. Education of our members on this issue must be a priority for QP, because workplace bullying must be stopped.
Hear, hear, sister. Thank you very much. Elaine, Mike 4.
Sandy Harding, QP Local
2745. Woohoo!
I'm literally wrapped in your support.
Yay!
We'd just like to thank you all. As I told you before, we're going to the bargaining table on Tuesday morning. We're exchanging proposals, and I think we're a pretty formidable force to be reckoned with when we go in. So I just want to thank you, and you can go to our website. There will be information if you want to send us some more of your support. And if you have MLAs or MPs or anybody to send their support, we'll take it. So thank you. Really, what I wanted to get up and say was to thank you for the childcare. Claude did speak about it. Child care allowed me to be able to attend and allowed a sister of mine to be able to attend. And it's extremely important. National has been phenomenal for me. A lot of you know I have a baby Jack, cutie baby Jack, and I couldn't participate without the support that they give me and the quality child care they provide that, quite frankly, I can't get in my own province. But so what I'd like to urge you to do is that not having on-site childcare at conferences and divisions is a huge barrier for women. You wonder why people can't go and young women can't go. It's because they want on-site childcare. It's just that another hurdle they have to go over. So if you can go back, if you don't have it, and demand it, we deserve it. We should have it. It's not something we should even be fighting for. We should be entitled to on-site childcare. So if you can go back, fight that fight, and we talk about successorship. This is huge. You know, if it is a barrier for me, I'm a national executive board member, I'm a provincial president, I sit on my division. If it is a barrier for me, can you only imagine how it is for other women? Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. So we're going to hear from the panelists, but just to let the roving mic folks know, next we're going to go to Gwen, Maureen, and Corina. But in the meantime, Sister Yolanda, there was a really great point made around the psychological effects and the effects that bullying has on people. Did you want to make some comments around that?
Yeah, thanks. I have to commend you, Sister, for raising it, and I also want to thank Vocal 951 for the campaign around harassment and bullying. A couple of months ago, Union Development came to a couple of committees, the Rainbow Committee and the Aboriginal Council Committee, and spoke to the rank and file grassroots members about how they can work on that workshop and make it work in our workplaces and relative to the members. And I want to thank Union Development for writing the workshop, and I think it's called Respectful Workplace. And it's, I believe that since education is so important, and we all know that, I believe that they've done a great job on that workshop, and I want to thank them for taking the initiative to come to the members, the rank and file, to work on it. And it'll be out there, and we encourage everyone to take it because we know that education is very important.
Thank you, Sister. Before I go to Helen, Maureen, you wanted to jump in? No? Helen? Okay. Maureen? Or Helen?
Yes, I also want to commend the sister for raising the points around psychological violence. And I also want to say that as sisters, we know that, as Sister Gloria Mills said the other night, that changing the culture of the union is the hardest part. And we also have to be vigilant around the psychological violence or bullying that takes place in our union. And I think that that's something that we heard overwhelmingly from the sisters when we did the task force consultations. So I think it's both in the workplace and in the union that we have to be vigilant around psychological violence. And just on the child care, I just wanted to point out an example of something the Ontario Division did last year under the leadership of Rachel Bashara, the co-chair of the Women's Committee at the time. We also realized that we have young adolescents at home who are often the kind of survivors of our endless meetings and union meetings, and that we really do need to take special care of them and to bring them on as allies. At the last division convention, there was a simultaneous youth conference where they learned about the union, learned more about global solidarity, and actually were allowed then to come back on the floor of convention and make a report. And it was absolutely exciting and motivating to see our young people get the ideas about what the union's all about and why their mom or dad has been so involved in that meetings that trying to change the world. So that's another, I think, issue that we have to take care of too.
Brother Paul, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, just on Alex raises a very good point about what Harper has done that's not out there, not well explained out there. I read the piece in the Globe and Mail yesterday 3 times, and it was still very hard to understand. Blocking the right to go to the Human Rights Channel with federal pay equity complaints. Sister Anik spoke to it yesterday just before the lunch break. But what we need to do is share with you through our web or our publications or whatever, 3 things. Number 1, to explain in plain language the avenue that's being cut off to women to pursue pay equity. And why have we sought legislation across Canada or resort to the courts or human rights commissions? Because we can't achieve it always at a bargaining table without those legislative frameworks. Secondly, we can give you the link to a great speech in the House of Commons by Sister Judy Washalu-Shalice, NDP MP, who took the government on yesterday on this question. So, but we need to explain this in very clear language. It doesn't affect 90% of the workforce, but the moral weight of the federal government for federally regulated employees blocking this route simply gives license to other right-wing politicians to do the same thing. So, and finally, I missed some of yesterday afternoon, but I was happy to do so. The Montreal Gazette editorial board was meeting with us on the budget and privatization, and a forget her name, a woman editorialist from the Montreal Gazette said, "What did Harper do?" And I had had the benefit of Nick's answer just before noon hour. They spent 10 minutes out of an hour, which is a long time, asking this because it's not understood what he did. They think he backed off of his economic statement from December where he was going to take away the right to strike of federal employees, and this budget is better. Well, there are some features of this budget that are better than the economic statement, but women in November's statement and in the budget 2 weeks ago have had a route to remedy for pay inequity taken away from them. And I hope the paper writes about it. They claim they're going to. So we need to do what Alex said, and I commit to you through our webpage or whatever. In plain English, we need to explain to you what happened in case any right-winger stands up and tries the same thing in your region.
Thank you, Paul. Sedalia wants to say a word.
Just a really quick comment on the pay equity issue. Paul just alluded to the fact about the federal regulated legislation, and most of us in the room belong to provincial divisions, and so I'd just like to bring your attention again just around airline issues, that it is a federally regulated workforce, and so all our rules and regulations come from the Canada Labour Code and from federal legislation. So the pay equity battle, as Sister Sherry Cameron yesterday talked about, has been a huge battle for us in the airlines, and we need to educate just our own members internally about what pay equity is, and it's this, a lot of our flight attendants, unfortunately, are under the impression that they're not on the same footing as pilots, for instance, and pilots, of course, it's a male-dominated profession. So along with educating on this Bill C-10 and, what the Harper government is trying to do, just educating on the basic principle of what pay equity is, and then, in fact, it's not just a right for women, but it is a human rights issue.
Thank you, Sedalia. Okay, so Gwen has a speaker.
Mic 3. Curling Kitty, QP Local 1048. I have a couple of questions and perhaps a challenge more to the room than to the panelists. People talk about Obama and how that happened in the United States. I live, breathe, and function on political action. The reality is that the steelworkers had 1 in 5 of their members working on direct campaigns. And that, in our organization, would be 25,000 CUPE members working on direct campaigns. We would be government. Now, when I look around the room, there are people who don't want to make eye contact. My plate is full. I cannot do it. I don't have time. So you're number 3. But you know number 5. You know them. They're in your local. They're your sister. They're your brother. They're your brand new member. They're your recent retiree. You know them. And you can find them, and you can direct them to the right place, and we can actually affect change. In British Columbia, we have to do this. If we don't do it in BC in May, we are in serious trouble. Gordon Campbell will have his way with our province for the Olympics, and we will see nothing but devastation after. It is critical, and it is something that we really, really have to do. In British Columbia, I would like to say thank you to Claude. We have 30 trained lobbyists who are ready and willing and able to lobby on C-10, so give us the word, and we're happy to go to those MPs in our province and deal with that directly. The only other one little thing I'd like to say, and it might be a little bit of a criticism, but for childcare, and it's not usually something I talk about, but I have circumstances right now that have created some difficulties in my household. And I am paying somebody to care for my children at home. My children are mid-teenagers, so they're capable of burning the house down, but they're somewhat independent. I am insisting on paying a child care worker a living wage So I am paying $20 an hour because that is appropriate. I only make $22 an hour myself. So the National Union provides for $50 a day for at-home care, and I'm in the hole. So it's just a point that I would like to make, that as action, we can say to the National Union through resolution or otherwise, when we are paying out of our dues and our coffers, we should be paying a living wage. I want that child care provider to not have to worry about giving up extra hours at a different job because I need them to provide 24-hour care. So I would encourage the National Union to review that policy and consider paying a living wage to people who provide child care. Thank you.
Thank you, sister. Maureen?
Sarah Fairbrass, Local 374. We're a composite municipal local on Vancouver Island. My question is, we've talked about the resolutions and going back to our locals and coming up with those prior to the provincial conventions that are coming up. I think for a lot of us, in order to be able to do that, and I know that the reports from this conference take time, my suggestion is that there is some way, whether by the website or the email contact list that's been created, if we can get those out to the women here before we go to our next local meetings so that we can take them back. If there are two or three that, you know, they're deemed to be the most important ones that have come up here in resolution type language so that we don't have to recreate it, if we all took those back to our locals and we all submitted them for provincial convention, we're probably really going to get somewhere.
Thank you. Karina?
Mic number two.
Hi, my name is Jane Stinson, and I'm the Managing Director of the Union Development Department, or the Education Department. I just wanted to make sure that that the sisters here were aware of all of the collective bargaining courses that we offer, because we've had some feedback that the workshops maybe weren't quite what some of you expected. You thought that maybe you'd be coming and getting some sort of hard skills around how to do collective bargaining, etc. So you can get courses and workshops on collective bargaining. You just need to contact your education representative. There's one in each region, and if you don't know who it is, you can get that information on the QP National website. We have preparing for bargaining, bargaining strategies, bargaining for equality, which tend to be weekend courses, as well as a week-long bargaining course, and not to mention women breaking barriers. Which, while it's not specifically on bargaining, I'm sure gives you lots of skills that you can apply in that context. We have been revising our courses to integrate equality into all of them, and we're doing that even more so in the coming years. So I just want to make sure you are all aware of that.
Thank you, Jane. So I'm going to go to Colleen and then back to Karina, and I just wanted to let people know that we have about 5 minutes left. So actually I'm going to go Colleen, Karina, and then Gwen. We have 5 minutes left in this discussion, so if you could keep your comments brief and the same with the folks up here so that we can hear from as many people as possible. Colleen.
Number five.
Number five, please.
I'm Shanaz Motani from QP 2950 at the University of British Columbia, and also alternate diversity VP representing issues of workers of color in BC. I have 2 points to make. The first one is to pick up on what my sisters have talked about, the issue of education and how important that is in our fight for equality. I must say that we are fortunate in BC to have such a wonderful equality rep such as Connie Kilfoyle. I know that in our local we've made a tremendous use of her, but I must say, even though we are probably more fortunate than other provinces, one person is not enough from that for the province. We have a tough time. Connie is split in 10 different directions. She is extremely busy, has a lot of work to do because there is a lot of work on the ground to be done, and we need more people like that, and we need QP national resources to be allocated towards equality reps on the ground that can do educating work, because that's where we are going to win our fight for equality. I think the education part is so important. My second point refers to my portfolio as an alternative diversity rep. And I'd like to, while I'm very proud about the goals that we have set in our fight here at the Conference for Women's Equality, I'd like to focus more on the equality of women of color and our fight for the more participation and to have the issues of women of color reflected in our goals across Canada, across the union at all levels. And so what I'd like to have is a bit of an update from our sister Yolanda on some of the work that has been done towards removing some of the barriers that women of color face in their participation within the union, but also to have their issues represented in negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you. So I know that I just said that I was going to take three people, but I notice the sister standing there with the microphone who hasn't been acknowledged at all yet. Oh, you're replacing Maureen. Okay, so I'm just going to go to Gwen for one last speaker because we were out of time. So we're going to take that last speaker. I apologize to those. Okay, two more. That's it then. That's it. So really quick, one there and one of Karina, and then we have to wrap up and hear from the panelists. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Okay, I am absolutely in your hands. Okay, go ahead. You're up. Okay.
Is it on? Oh, talk about standing up for equality. Thank you. Since we're talking about setting the table, I have to say I've enjoyed myself thoroughly at this conference, but I do have some concerns that were addressed yesterday with me, and I'll try and keep this as short as possible. There's a lady here, a sister amongst us, who has been silenced by her local, and as well, I believe, by National QP. I just want people to recognize that, and if there's an avenue for her to pursue to lodge her formal complaints about being harassed by people in her local, please redirect her, and I think I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, sister, that absolutely will be responded to, I have no doubt. So I'm going to go to Gwen, and then Karina, and then we have to wrap very quickly, please.
My name is Tara LaRose, and I'm from 3904, which is a Ryerson local. But I'm a social worker, and that's the university sector, so it's all kind of complicated. I'd like to talk about the issue of EAP, which was something that was brought up a couple of times throughout the conference. And I'm a survivor from having worked in an EAP call center, providing on-telephone counseling to people. And I guess I would invite people to really think about what EAP means and what kind of service you're purchasing. Oh, sorry, employee assistance programs. So this is your counseling that you purchase as part of your benefits, you receive as part of your benefits. Most of those companies are big corporate, not for-profit companies. It's essentially like buying counseling from Aramark. The kind of counseling that you're receiving may not be what you think you're getting, and the kind of service that you're entitled to may also not be revealed to you. So there is one unionized EAP company in Canada, but even it is problematic because the collective agreement is not regularly enforced. So I would invite you to problematize EAP as a solution. The other thing that I just wanted to bring up was the issue of reps. I guess I'm just kind of curious about why there's so many reps on contract and why the contracts get extended from really short period to really short period and how that's living our values.
Thank you, sister. One final speaker here from Karina.
Mic two.
My name is Verlyn Howe from Local 2191, which is the social services sector. I just wish to make an comment on a problem here. It's regarding casualization of the labor force. And as you know, presently our local is threatened, I would say, by incline of casualization within our force. And I just needed to know if there, from any of the panelists there, if there's anything done or it's, I would say, any plans for funding for a campaign on casualization. And casualization, it's mainly racialized members, women, and youth. So I need to see representation of these individuals on the panel or in leadership. So I just wanted to know if anyone had anything to say.
Thank you, sister. Okay, so there's been actually a number of points that have been raised that need to be responded to. Sister Yolanda, a direct question to you, if you could respond.
I just took down some notes because then other people ask questions and then my mind goes somewhere else. I just refer to some of my notes that I took. I just want to thank the people or the members that were here on Wednesday evening for an employment equity forum. It was very good. And the direction that you've sent the staff union to do was very positive. And we look forward to working with them as we make the progress. I have to say that many people that didn't attend don't know some of the answers to some of the questions, so I'll just try to answer it quickly in a review of what happened Wednesday. We have a joint employment equity committee, which is with the staff unions, and I have to say that the members on the committee are very progressive and they're great activists, and the committee is very positive, and we know that we can make there are plans in place to continue to work on making our staff more representative of the communities. We know that the committee is, our sister talked about change and the Obama slogan. It's not just a slogan for the committee. They actually have worked on a survey, and a self-identifying survey. We've met a couple of times and we have a couple of more meetings to give out to our staff unions and COPE over the next couple of months in the division conferences that you'll be attending. And it's not just another survey, because people talk about surveys and, you know, where do they go, what do they do with them, but it's a survey that actually asks about some of the barriers that they face. And we're hoping that with those answers that come back, that we will be able to take those and not just develop a recruitment strategy plan, but we'll also look at having a mentoring, so that once you get in, that you're not lost in the shuffle or temporary and here today, gone tomorrow, but there'll be retainment, and that's really, really what's most important. And of course, workers of color, Aboriginal, disabilities, young workers, we definitely have all of the categories will be taken care of. So thank you for your question, sister, and for sure, if you have any other comments, or you know, you can email me, where we would like to take any ideas that any of the sisters have that we can bring forward to the committee as we make progress and work together to make it more reflective. Thank you.
So, Brother Paul, there was a specific question about somebody being silenced and not bringing forward their concerns. Did you want to address that?
Sure. First, I can do three others very quickly. Carlene raises a very good point about child care for attending any union functions and us paying a living, real wage, not a casual kind of child care thing. Somebody said earlier today, we're reviewing the model bylaws as part of the National Women's Task Force recommendations, putting an equality lens on them. That'll be sent to all of your locals, because it's your locals that pay to send people to division conventions and conferences. And so we don't control your bylaws, but we're putting the equality lens on your bylaws, including a comprehensive section on childcare, which will include principles like Carlene talked about. And Claude and I should take back and look at those comments she made. There's 24 locals here that were sponsored by us as part of the small, or the National Events Assistance Fund. So 24 delegates here are here at National's initiative, and if any of them need child care, we should embrace those principles. There was a question, and I would go back, a sister raised about resolutions. Can we use our website to share resolutions around the country? I would prefer, and I'll tell you why, that you go the direction that Helen said earlier. Give Helen and the Women's Committee your email address. I'll tell you why. Our national website can't be used as a an advocate one way or the other on, you know, some resolutions are very easy to support. Let's oppose Harper's attack on pay equity. I don't think anyone would mind if we sent that one around. There could be a resolution to reduce the per capita in Division X because we're not happy with it. And just the act of us sending that around will cause some people to say, whoa, CUPE National wants to reduce the per capita. Some resolutions are very much more political and debated. But we will give you, if you give us your email addresses, Helen put the olive branch out to network that way. And why are reps on contract? And then your question, Helen, or Candace, sorry. We have around 800 people working for CUPE today as we sit here. About 730 of them are permanent employees. Every single permanent job in CUPE is filled. We actually post jobs. If somebody tells us they're retiring in May 1st, we post their job now. We fill all our permanent jobs. But if there's an extra requirement because a rep is servicing workers on strike, we had the Journal de Québec, people on lockout, I guess, for 15 months. We had dedicated that rep. Somebody filled in behind him. It's not a permanent job, and we're a completely unionized workforce except for one CUPE employee. Everybody else is unionized, and under the collective agreement, we fill our permanent jobs, but if there's a temporary requirement, that gets posted, and there's extensions, and it's filled temporary. So it's people on LTD. Well, Maureen being our acting director of equality, because Ann McGrath has been hired by Jack. He hasn't answered my grievance yet. But Ann McGrath, that's her job. She has the right to come back to that. Maureen's a permanent employee. Her job gets filled in Manitoba, interestingly, by another permanent rep. That permanent rep, her job is filled right now by a temporary person. Could be for, you know, many months, but we can't create another permanent position. So, but unlike the employers that we have to deal with on your behalf who don't fill our permanent jobs and come up with a casual workforce, CUPE's got 100%+ of its permanent jobs filled. When there's an LTD or a maternity leave, we also have temporaries. Finally, I know the situation the sister spoke of about a sister being silenced by her local, and there's multiple things going on, including my office. And is that the question you asked me about? There's four trials going on within that local, which is the purview of the membership. And there's assistance going on from my office as well. And there's multiple sisters and brothers involved, but one sister was sharing her story last night with people, which is fair ball. But there's an entire apparatus when you guys have complaints that at times involves my office, at times involves Claude's office, and at times involves national reps. And I think all of that's going on in the case of this local.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, and Claude's just pointing out that at the end of the day, there is always our 1-800 number, our ombudsman person here available to all of you at this conference. Before I go to Helen and Sedalia about the casualization of part-time workers and campaigns we can do, I wonder if Maureen can just sort of respond to the question around how we can get this information out to people quickly so that they can use this in their meetings and their divisions in a timely way. Maureen?
Well, the Women's Committee is meeting on adjournment, and I think at that point, we were talking about trying to draft up some resolutions. So the intent, I think, is to try and put some ideas together in a fairly short time period, which we would then... We do have this network of people's address, names, and email lists, which we... Well, I don't know. Paul's saying it can't officially, I guess, come from through the CUPE. I'm not sure. We'll get it out to people somehow. We have, you know, like create a listserv or something, and we will get that information out to people that it has been developed, and here's some ideas that you can take. So somehow we will be working on that when we meet on adjournment to figure out how we can operationalize that.
And if you haven't already given us your email address, please feel free to do that before you leave. And I guess lastly, to cover anything that you want, Sedalia, you go ahead.
Just around the listserv, a reminder, please do not provide us email addresses from your employer.
Those are monitored by your employer, all that email that goes. They own the server. So if you don't have another account, you can set up a free Hotmail or Gmail account, and that would be preferable for us to send information that way. Members at qp.ca.
You can actually make up, have your own email address if you go to the QP website, and your extension will be your name at members.qp.ca.
Okay, great. And Helen, do you want to talk to us a little bit about campaign around casualism?
Yeah, just before I do that too, I mean, I was really concerned that Sister Sarah talked about the resolutions and how quickly this can happen. And I know there's some urgency to it. So I just wanted to say probably the easiest way is, I'm not sure we're going to be writing the resolutions today, but as soon as we can, we will write those resolutions. My name is Helen Kennedy. My email address is kennedyh@rogers.com. And if you need it again, come and see me afterwards. Sister Verilyn, around the campaign for uplifting casualization, uplifting members, trying to address campaigns around the casualization that and contingent and temporary workers that are mostly racialized members and young workers. I think this is really, really important. I think that the way I know QP works is that and I'm not sure whether it's already been identified in some campaigns, in particular around the anti-privatization campaign, because that's where a lot of this would come in, that as services are privatized, they continue to wear away in terms of this, the wages and benefits, until there are lower paid workers, as the case was in HEU. But I think what we need to do is look at proposing that. Maybe this is also one of those good things to put in a resolution for the National Convention, that if it hasn't happened already, there really should be a campaign that looks at uplifting the wages, getting benefits for workers in part-time work, in temporary work. So I think that's really important. And campaigns can be done both by locals, by divisions, but also by district councils, by councils of unions. So there's lots of ways to look at getting some funding from my brother Claude. And I know that district councils in Ontario, for example, have access to some funding that we could even look at a district council. Sister Verilyn is a member of the Toronto Council, and we could discuss this as a possible campaign.